Good evening, Crypt Keepers, and welcome to Cryptique, where we discuss all things paranormal, occult, UFOs, metaphysical, hidden history, forbidden archaeology, and all things truther. Please like, subscribe, and share. Socials are in the notes. Let us know what you think at CryptiquePodcast@gmail.com. Check out our cool stuff at CryptiquePodcastStore.com. And you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/CryptiquePI. Your interaction is much appreciated. So I'm going to be just covering this episode. It's kind of a quickie. And what we're going to do is give you some stories of paranormal events, just the short stories, and then you get to pick the full-length episode we do. You can vote on any of our socials. You can email us at CryptiquePodcast@gmail.com or leave a comment on YouTube. First up, the Enfield Monster. Back in 1973, in Enfield, Illinois, there was quite the peculiar tale stirring up some attention. Henry McDaniel, a resident of the area, made quite the claim to the local reporters. According to the Mount Vernon Register News, he described a strange little critter he spotted lurking around his yard. Picture this: three legs, a short body, two stubby arms, and eyes as big as flashlights, two of them, both pink. The plot thickened when the police got involved. They discovered scratches on McDaniel's door screen and some footprints that at first glance resembled a dog. But these prints allegedly had six toes. McDaniel had quite the theory brewing. He boldly declared to the newspaper, "If they do find it, they will find more than one, and they won't be from this planet. I can tell you that." So whether you're a skeptic or a believer, it's hard to deny the intrigue in this tale. And decades later, we're still scratching our heads over what exactly might have been lurking in Enfield all those years ago. The mystery remains unsolved. Or does it? I think I've got this one figured out, Crypt Keepers. So if you pick this one, you'll get your answer. That is the Enfield Monster. Moving on, the Suicide Hotel. Columbia's Hotel del Salto is not your typical lodging spot. It's gained far more renown for its ghostly tales than for hosting an actual guest. Once a hotel, it now stands as a museum, its history woven with eerie anecdotes that seem to linger in the very walls. Back in 1923, architect Carlos Arturo Tapias lent his expertise to craft this marvel overlooking the majestic Tequendama Falls. The scenery was breathtaking, drawing visitors from far and wide. But amidst the beauty lay a grim reality. Guests had a habit of getting a bit too close to the edge, sometimes with tragic consequences. With a name like Hotel of the Leap, you can bet there's a story behind it. Legend has it that long before the hotel's construction, the indigenous Musica tribe found themselves in a dire predicament. Faced with Spanish colonizers, they chose a different fate. They leaped from the cliffs, preferring death over subjugation. Their spirit seems to linger around these falls, their stories echoing through the ages. Today, the Hotel del Salto may be devoid of guests, but its walls whisper tales of those who once sought its grandeur. It's a place where history and legend intertwine, inviting visitors to ponder the mysteries that shroud this hauntingly beautiful locale. That is the Suicide Hotel. Next up, the Axe Murder House. The Villisca Axe Murder House in Villisca, Iowa is like something straight out of a horror movie, a chilling attraction that draws in thrill seekers and those fascinated by the paranormal. Its notoriety stems from a gruesome and still unsolved event that shook the town in 1912. Six children and two adults brutally murdered, their skulls crushed by the merciless swing of an axe wielded by an unknown assailant. Fast forward to 94, and the house steeped in tragedy underwent a transformation. Purchased and restored to its 1912 condition, it became a macabre tourist destination. For a price tag of $428 a night. That's right, $428 a night. Brave souls could spend the night in the very rooms where unspeakable horrors unfolded. Those who dare to venture inside often report spine-tingling encounters, visions of a spectral figure wielding an axe echoes of children's screams reverberating through the hall. But in November of 2014, the already eerie atmosphere of the Villisca Axe Murder House took a darker turn. Robert Stephen Lorson Jr. from Rhinelander, Wisconsin, was part of a group on a recreational paranormal visit when tragedy struck. His companions made a horrifying discovery. Lorson, stabbed in the chest with all signs pointing to a self-inflicted wound. The eerie coincidence? The incident occurred around 12:45 a.m., the same time as the infamous axe murders took place in 1912. Lorson was swiftly rushed to the hospital, first nearby, then airlifted to Creighton University Medical Center in Omaha. Miraculously, he survived his injuries, but the events of that night remain shrouded in mystery. Lorson has never spoken publicly about what transpired within the walls of the haunted house. For Martha Lynn, the current owner of the Villisca Axe Murder House, the incident was deeply unsettling. While publicity is one thing, she certainly didn't envision this kind of attention. "It's publicity, but it's not exactly the kind of publicity you desire to have," she lamented. "I don't want people thinking that when they come to the Villisca Axe Murder House, something's going to happen that's going to make them do something like that." Despite the unsettling turn of events, the house continues to welcome visitors, offering tours and overnight stays to those brave enough to confront the shadows of its tragic past. That is the Villisca Axe Murder House. Next up, the Haunted Doll. Now, we've covered Robert the Doll, but this one's a little different. When you hear the phrase haunted dolls, you probably imagine images of those eerie Victorian-era porcelain figures, right? The ones with the soul-piercing eyes and unsettling smiles that seem to follow you wherever you go. Chances are you don't have any of those lying around your house, but before you breathe a sigh of relief, think again. Because the world of haunted toys can take some unexpected turns. Case in point, a seemingly innocent Disney Frozen Elsa doll gifted during the Christmas season of 2013 in the Houston area made waves earlier this year when it started exhibiting some seriously spooky behavior. Picture this, a cheerful holiday gift meant to bring joy to a children's heart, suddenly taking on a sinister vibe. It's the stuff of nightmares. And yet, here we are, with reports of a seemingly possessed Elsa doll causing quite a stir. It just goes to show you never quite know what might be lurking beneath the surface, even in the most innocuous of toys. So the next time you're tempted to dismiss the tales of haunted dolls as mere superstition, remember the cautionary tale of the Frozen Elsa doll. KPRC2 Houston News reported, "The doll recited phrases from the movie Frozen and sang 'Let It Go' when a button on its necklace was pressed. For 2 years it did that in English," the mother, Emily Madonia, said. "In 2015, it started doing it alternating between Spanish and English. There wasn't a button that changed these, it was just random." The family has owned the doll for more than 6 years and never changed its batteries. The mother says the doll would randomly begin to speak and sing, even with its switch turned off. The family decided to throw the creepy doll out in December of 2019. Weeks later, they found it inside a bench in their living room. The kids insisted they didn't put it there, and she believed them because they wouldn't have dug through the garbage outside, Madonia told KPRC2 Houston News. At that point, Elsa ceased to sing the English rendition of Let It Go altogether, speaking only Spanish when it was pressed. Now, if you thought getting rid of a haunted doll was as simple as tossing it in the trash, think again. The family took some drastic measures to rid themselves of that eerie Frozen Elsa doll that had come to life. First, they double-bagged the doll and tucked it away at the bottom of their garbage bin, hoping to be done with the creepy vibes once and for all. But as fate would have it, upon their return from a trip, they discovered Elsa lurking in their backyard as if defying the laws of logic and reason. But who knows what the future holds for this creepy, seemingly unshakable presence. One thing's for sure, when it comes to haunted dolls, you can never be too careful. That one is the Haunted Elsa doll. The next one, the Phone Stalker. In 2007, a chilling series of events unfolded that left several families in Fir Crest, Washington, living in fear and confusion. ABC News documented the unsettling phenomenon of families receiving terrifyingly specific death threats via their cell phones. What made these threats particularly unnerving was the eerie accuracy with which the unidentified callers seemed to know intimate details about the family's lives. Imagine receiving calls at all hours of the night with the caller threatening to harm your loved ones, your children, your pets, even your grandparents. To make matters worse, these calls weren't just idle threats. Voicemails played recordings of private conversations, including one disturbing instance where a conversation with a local police detective was replayed back to the family. For the Kuykendall family, the nightmare persisted for months, with a scratchy voice caller threatening to slit their throats. But what truly baffled investigators was when they attempted to trace the calls, only to find that they were originating from the Kuykendall's own phones, despite the phones being turned off. As if the situation couldn't get any more unsettling, the families began to suspect that the callers were using their cell phones to spy on them. They claimed that the hackers seemed to know their every move, from their whereabouts to their activities, and even what they were wearing at any given moment. Private conversations were recorded and replayed back to them, leaving the families and local police feeling utterly powerless in the face of this technological intrusion. The case remains a haunting reminder of the dark side of modern technology and the vulnerabilities that come with it. Despite extensive investigations, the source of these disturbing calls remains a mystery, leaving the affected families living in a state of constant fear and uncertainty. That is the phone stalker. Next up, we have Issei the Cannibal. The case of Issei Sagawa is one of the most disturbing and perplexing in criminal history. In 1974, the 24-year-old Waco University student allegedly committed a horrifying act, breaking into a German woman's apartment in Tokyo while she slept and attempting to cut off a piece of her flesh to consume. The victim woke up and fought back, leading to Sagawa's capture by the police. However, due to a bizarre turn of events, he was mistakenly charged with attempted rape instead of the more heinous crime he had committed. Sagawa's wealthy father intervened, paying off the victim in a settlement outside of court to have the charges dropped. This shocking miscarriage of justice allowed Sagawa to evade proper punishment for his heinous actions. Tragically, Sagawa's story didn't end there. In 1981, he allegedly committed an even more horrific crime in France. He murdered and then consumed parts of a fellow university student, René Hartfeld, documenting the gruesome act with photographs. Sagawa was apprehended by authorities while attempting to dispose of the remaining evidence in a lake. Despite the gravity of his crimes, a legal technicality involving the French government's refusal to turn over crucial case documents resulted in Sagawa's murder charges being dropped. He was deported back to Japan, where he was committed to a mental institution. In a shocking twist, Sagawa checked himself out of the mental hospital and has since been walking the streets as a free man. Issei has even become a controversial celebrity, writing over 20 books. According to Japan Today, he most recently fantasized about an unnamed TV actress, saying, quote, "I'll catch a glimpse of her thigh and think, that sure looks tasty, but I don't feel like I actually want to eat it. As I accomplished the act of cannibalism once, there's no meaning to maintaining the desire for it anymore. In my book, I wrote that it, human flesh, was tasty, but that was not really true. I'd much rather eat Kobe beef, but because I'd desired to consume human flesh for so long, I'd managed to convince myself that it would necessarily be delicious." End quote. He's currently 73 years old and continues to live in Kawasaki City, Japan. To this day, no one knows why France didn't allow Japan to give him a trial, and that's the cannibal Issei Sagawa. So now that you've heard the overviews, you get to pick the full-length episode we do. It's easy. Just shoot us an email at crypticpodcast@gmail.com or vote on any of our socials or leave a comment on YouTube. So whatever you tell us you want to hear, we'll do. Good evening, Crypt Keepers.